Welcome into another edition of the Dana Victory Podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I'm Rick, and to start this podcast off, I'm going to do a special interview. It's a busy time of the year for the coaching staff, but one guy has made some time out of his day here on Monday afternoon to give us a few minutes. Assistant coach of the Xavier Musketeers, Luke Murray, joining us now on the podcast. Coach, let's start here. What was last night like? You find out you get a 2 seed. You're all at Coach Mack's house. Take us through the rest of the night. What happened from there?
You know, after we found out that we had Weber State, you know, all the coaches headed back to Cintas Center, and we kind of distributed the scouting reports. Coach Steele is going to have Weber State, and then I'm going to have Pitt, and Mike DeGeese is going to have Wisconsin. So once we kind of got that sorted out, we got to work. You know, got a lot of film, started making a lot of phone calls to different coaches across the country, a couple guys in the Big Sky Conference that are familiar with Weber State. And, you know, I reached out to a number of contacts in the ACC, and I know Mike did the same with people he's close with in the Big Ten and across the country, and really tried to get ourselves up to speed as much as we could on these teams. And we were here late into the night, you know, breaking down games and really starting to put together kind of the initial game plan ideas.
Well, obviously, I know you were focused on Pitt last night, but the fans are focused on Weber State. I'm sure you've talked to the other assistants. Can you give us a crash course? What have you heard? I mean, Jeremy Singlin looks good. Joel Bombay, kind of a Jalen Reynolds-type big man.
Yeah, you know, those two guys in particular stand out. You know, I've watched some film on those guys as well, you know, over the last couple hours. And Singlin, like you mentioned, is a terrific shooter. You know, I think he averaged over 18 points a game this year and 44-45% on the season from three. So he's a terrific player, you know, first-team all-conference player in the Big Sky. And I can even remember back to watching him play against Arizona a couple years ago in the tournament. And I think he was the rookie of the year in the Big Sky at that point. So he's had a really good season. He's a terrific shooter and somebody that we're going to have to really guard well. And then obviously, like you mentioned, Ballenboy, a terrific player, you know, 3-time defensive player of the year in the conference, someone who averages, you know, over 17 points and I think close to 13 rebounds. He may be the nation's leading rebounder, if I'm not mistaken, and a very good shot blocker as well. So those two guys stand out as being terrific players that could probably play a lot of different places across the country. But I think, you know, just kind of stylistically, you know, not too dissimilar from some of the teams that we've seen in our league and the fact that they play, you know, kind of two traditional post guys. I think, you know, one of the concerns sometimes when you get to the NCAA tournament is running into a team with a really, really unique style and a different way of playing. I won't necessarily say that Weber State is that. I think they're fairly traditional, but they're really good at being traditional. It's, you know, kind of why they've been the premier program in that conference over the last couple of years.
Obviously, you know, one of the weaknesses, if you will, of this Xavier team, and it has very few, has been those jet quick, super athletic guards or bigger, stronger guards, Isaiah Whiteheads, Maurice Watsons. And, you know, you guys do a great job with the personnel you have, but those guys give you trouble. This Weber State mm-hmm. team doesn't seem to have that type of athleticism in the backcourt. Would you agree?
You know, I don't want to jump to conclusions with having not seen them a ton, but from what I can tell, certainly what Coach Steele's been watching, Coach Mack's been watching over, you know, the course of the last 24 hours or so or close to it, I would say you're probably right, Rick. I don't think that there's that sort of guard, that sort of collection of guards on their team. And like I mentioned, you know, Singlin's a terrific player, but he gets more kind of coming off single double actions, really uses screens well, terrific shooter, not somebody who's necessarily as dynamic off the dribble as a playmaker and an attacker of the basket. And I think that pretty much goes for the rest of their group in the backcourt. So I think you're probably right in saying that that's probably going to be something that we won't see as much of from Weber State.
Just the way you guys finished the regular season and then obviously the Seton Hall game, you give up 83 again. The fans are a little mm-hmm. concerned with the number of points that have been given up. Obviously, the message board has been talking about that a lot. I've argued the possessions of your games have been really high. You've been playing at a fast yeah. pace over these games, so that kind of changes how you have to look at those. You have to go more by points per possession as opposed to points per game. But is the defense a concern for you guys? Do you need to pick it up on that end? Is it? Have you seen a drop-off since where you were at maybe a month ago or 2 months ago?
You know, I don't know that we've necessarily seen a drop-off, but I would say that defense is a concern. Just generally, I think our offense is probably a little bit further ahead than our defense and probably has been throughout the course of the year. You know, obviously teams that are able to guard at a really high level give themselves a great chance of advancing in the NCAA tournament. But you make a really good point, Rick, in terms of, you know, how fast our games have been played, the tempo at which they've been played, the number of possessions, like you said, is much more indicative than just purely the raw number in terms of point total. You know, you look back at a game like Villanova, you know, I actually thought we guarded really well. They scored 83 points. You know, they're a terrific team. They've been a top five team all year long. You know, some of that you have to give credit to the team that you're playing. A team like Creighton plays so, so fast. You know, there are going to be so many more possessions in those games. And again, I think, you know, when you look at it, you know, the last handful of games that we've played have been against the best teams in our conference. You know, so it becomes more and more challenging to defend night in and night out. But I think, you know, kind of like we've all talked about over the last couple of weeks, our offense hasn't necessarily helped our defense, you know, and that was one of the main concerns coming into the Seton Hall game and coming out of the Seton Hall game as well in the conference tournament, was that we wanted to be much more deliberate in terms of what we wanted to do offensively in our attack and really not open up the floor for them in their transition game. You know, I would say that, you know, when we're able to get back and be set, our half-court defense hasn't been nearly as poor as maybe it's been documented. I think, you know, what's hurt us more is those possessions that we can't defend, you know, 4-on-3s, you know, 3-on-2s, those sort of things, you know, live ball turnovers. I think that's really more where we've been hurt in terms of our overall defense. But, you know, as you mentioned, we're going to have to be at our best in all facets of the game to advance.
How much more of a weapon is the 1-3-1 against a team that hasn't played you two or three times already in a season?
I would expect it to be, you know, kind of a much more significant weapon. You know, I had a text conversation with Kevin Willard from Seton Hall yesterday, and, you know, he talked a handful of times about how, you know, the second, the third time around, his group was much more comfortable against our 1-3-1. And again, I don't know that we necessarily played it as well as we would have liked to, but I do think there's something to be said for having a little bit of familiarity against the defense and having a better understanding of how it feels out there and what your looks and reads are as an offensive player. So I'm sure that, you know, some of the teams that are looking at us as a potential opponent in the tournament, you know, are a little uneasy at the idea of playing against a defense that's unique like ours and one that's been, you know, really effective for us.
Great stuff, Coach. You're being gracious with your time. I got a couple more quick things to end here. I've got to ask about this. Big East tournament. Everyone loved the pictures of you and especially your father celebrating in the stands with his X hat on. What was that experience like for you? Seemed like you got to spend some time with him. How much did you get to see him and how much did you enjoy that?
It was great. You know, honestly, you know, the weekend didn't necessarily go as planned. You know, would have loved to have a chance to play in the championship game and ultimately win that game. So obviously, you know, fell short of our goals as a team. So that's disappointing and certainly put a damper on the weekend. But, you know, it was fun for me and for him, you know, just having grown up in New York City and having a chance to coach at Madison Square Garden for the first time for myself was really monumental. And then having my dad there, you know, he and I went to, you know, dozens and dozens of Knick games growing up as a kid. So to kind of be back in that setting and have it come full circle was pretty cool. And I know he was excited to get a chance to watch Xavier. And, you know, he'll be coming out to St. Louis and following us in the tournament as well.
Coach, real quick, we're always focused on the future here at MusketeerReport.com. So a couple guys you were the lead recruiter on, I want to get your thoughts on. Eddie Ekior is with the team. He's been practicing for a few months now. How's he looking?
You know, he's done well. I think he came in, you know, with kind of, you know, a lot to learn. You know, he doesn't necessarily play against the best competition on a daily basis when he's home in Ottawa. And I think, you know, his learning curve was probably a little bit more steep than other freshmen that come in and have that type of experience of playing against great players, you know, day in and day out and being able to train with other college guys and that sort of thing. That's not really accessible for him in Ottawa. So I think, you know, his first couple of weeks were certainly challenging for him, but he has seemed to hit his stride recently in practice. And it's tough because, you know, this time of year, there's not a whole lot of competitive segments. You know, practices are condensed and, you know, we don't necessarily always have a chance to get him out there and in the flow of practice for extended periods of time. But he plays really, really hard. He's done a really good job of changing his body. He came in at 218 pounds and measured just under 6'9", and he's now up to 232 pounds. So he's put on 14 pounds of muscle. Wow. He's becoming a more effective back-to-the-basket player. That's not really a strength of his at this point. He's a guy who uses his quickness. He has really good quickness offensively and ability to drive by guys from 15 to 17 feet in. Pretty good finisher around the basket. And then defensively, he's really versatile because he can move his feet out on the perimeter and is a very good defensive rebounder as well. So we're trying to get him to be a more comfortable back-to-the-basket player so he can kind of add that element to his game. But I think he's going to be somebody who's going to be a really good player down the line for us. And, you know, we're excited about his progress.
Do you remember what his reach measured at? I remember him being really long.
You know, he's got a 7'2 or 7'3 wingspan.
Wow.
You know, so he's got long arms for a guy who's, you know, a little south of 6'9".
And Tyreek Jones has now signed, so I believe you can speak mm-hmm. on him. He had a great year at Vermont Academy.
Yeah, he did. You know, he played alongside a tremendous player who is going to another school. And so he took a number of the headlines this year, and rightfully so, because of how well he played. But, you know, Tyreek did a great job as well. They ended up winning the Class AA New England Prep School Championship, which is a great accomplishment for him. It's a really, really tough league. And so they performed well all the way to the end here and just wrapped up that title. But he's really done a nice job of kind of similarly to Eddie, diversifying his offensive game a little bit, becoming a little bit more fluid with his back to the basket as well. He's got really good speed. I think defensively he'll come in and be a guy that can help us in terms of the way that he'll jump ball screens. He's a terrific rebounder on both ends of the floor. You know, he's going to have to become, you know, more confident and more fluid offensive player. And I think that will come in time, but, he's really excited about being at Xavier. I think he's going to add some great strength and athleticism and physicality to our front court as well. So, he's another guy that I know is going to be a good player down the line and we're excited to have.
He is the assistant coach of the Xavier Musketeers, Luke Murray. Coach, great stuff. I know you guys are busy. Thank you so much for your time.
You got it, Rick. Thanks, man.
All right, great stuff from Coach Murray. Really appreciate him joining us on the podcast. And now joining me on the podcast is one of our usual cast of characters, the legend Brian Snow. Snow, the brackets came out last night, and we didn't discuss this in our long pre-show meeting where we carefully planned out the topics on this podcast, but I do want to start here. The CBS selection show. Getting crushed by everyone universally. First of all, let me say, I think they could do it better. I do think it would be a better format to bring out the bracket that like they always used to, just having Gumbel read them off one by one quickly, get a quick hit on each team from one of your expert analysts, and you keep it moving. And then maybe in the second hour, you do your interviews and you do your more analysis. And if you want to let Barkley and Kenny Smith act like idiots, that's fine. I also agree with maybe the complaint that you just don't enjoy listening to guys who really don't know college basketball and the Jet and Barkley trying to discuss these teams. I think they could be used better to maybe talk about, you know, what it's like as a player to be in these situations or what types of things win tournament games, maybe something like that. But just being funny and entertaining is what Barkley does. So I love him on TV. I really don't have a problem with them using him, but they maybe can, you know, find a better way to use him. But overall, I think people are so over the top about how bad this show was. I mean, what do you want? What are you doing on 6 o'clock on a Sunday that you needed to get out of there in under 40 minutes? Like, why did that show need to be so fast? You were just going to flip it over to ESPN and watch another 2 hours of analysis on there, and it's not like their talking heads were going to be much better.
First of all, did you come up for air through that entire rant?
No.
Like, are you turning blue over there?
No, I slept for like 11 hours last night after coming home from New York City. It was much needed, so I'm pretty well charged today.
Spitting fire.
Although my voice is a little hoarse after that whole UConn-UC debacle.
So the selection show, I mean, like, I was watching with my dad and my brother, and they were complaining, or at least my dad was. And I was like, hey, fellas, guess what? You're watching, I'm watching, and you, like, everybody else is watching. That's all they care about. And if they can sell ads for 2 hours instead of one, God bless them. They're paying $6 billion to do it. So to me, it just kind of is what it is. Was it good? No. But that's because they set it up stupidly, not because it was 2 hours.
Yeah, but I just, like, people want to complain.
It's not that big a deal. Like,
right.
I know people fear change. I get that. God knows I fear change. But, like, get over it. It's not that big a deal. It's team names being flashed on a screen.
Right.
At its root. It's like the NFL combine.
If you just wanted to look at the leaked bracket, then just looked at the leaked bracket and don't watch. Yeah. But like, if you think this show was significantly worse than any other selection show, you're out of your mind. They're all very simple, dumb shows. I mean, it's not very good television. You just watch because you care, and you always will. Anyway, let's move on. Xavier has Weber State in the first round. They got the 2 seed. First of all, were you surprised they got the 2 seed? Because going into the Big East tournament, I thought they were a 2 seed no matter what, pretty much. Then as things played out, I kind of started looking at things a little more closely. I had them about 9, if you went S-curve, yeah. You know. I had them about 9th, thinking they were the top 3 seed.
Quite honestly, I don't really understand the justification for them getting the 2 and West Virginia getting the 3. Realistically, does it matter all that much? No. But I think West Virginia's body of work was better than Xavier's body of work. And then there's no justification for being over Villanova, Oklahoma, or Michigan State on the 2 line as well. So I thought they would come in at the 9 or 10 spot on the S-curve and get a 3 seed, which I felt would have been fair and which I felt would have been correct. Now, do I think people should be calling their congressman because Xavier's a 2 and West Virginia's a 3? No, it was fairly close. But I would still say, in my opinion, West Virginia had a slightly better body of work than Xavier did.
Is there anything we can point – like the one thing, especially with Xavier, that I think helped them, just judging off of some of the comments from whoever the committee guy that was on all the interviews was saying, was maybe that they valued the consistency. In a year where everyone seemed to be losing games, they valued the fact that Xavier wasn't losing games and wasn't losing to bad teams. That seemed to be a big deal for some of their other arguments. So is that what you think, maybe place it on, the fact that Xavier just had 5 losses and really no bad losses?
Yeah, I guess that'd probably be it. Also, you know, they were pretty good away from home.
True.
So I think that helped a lot too. Their record against teams in the field is phenomenal. I don't know how many wins they literally have, like 10, because, you know, USC got in, Michigan got in, asterisk, you know, Dayton's in. So you had all those teams from the non-conference that ended up in the field. So their record against the field was pretty good. So I'm assuming that had something to do with it as well.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So Weber State, you know, I've already posted on the board a little bit about this stuff. And obviously Luke Murray, you just heard him talking about it. Jeremy Singlin, just an outstanding shooter. They're going to run basically their offense is they do some ball screen stuff, ball screen motion, exactly like Xavier's ran. And then they do a lot of baseline runner stuff for Jeremy Singlin, which is essentially what Xavier did when Jordan Crawford was here. Though Singlin's a much different player from Crawford. He's not the slasher or the creator off the bounce. He does like a lot of tough shots. He takes tough shots and he makes tough shots. If he puts the ball on the deck, he's usually looking to do a step back and a mid-range fadeaway type jumper. So I think that, you know, I don't know how you feel about that, Snow, but to me, that is the type of guy, you know, chasing off single double screens is what Remy Abel excels at.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, it's the Kellen Dunham type guy. Right. Now, Kellen's, you know, realistically a better player, but it's that same type of guy. It's like, Remy, guard him. Okay. You know, so I think in that respect, it's a good matchup. They don't have a point guard who really breaks you down. They're not going to get after you defensively. They play slower, but they're not complete death like a Wisconsin is in terms of how god-awful slow they play. So, you know, overall, any 2 versus 15 should be a good matchup for the 2, but they don't have the characteristics that give Xavier trouble.
Right, and as Coach Murray also mentioned, they're not a team. They're not one of those small conference teams that has a super unique style where it's like, oh, crap, we're not going to get a chance to see this before we get on the court. Defensively, they're pretty straight up man-to-man. Now, their big man, Joel Bolomboy, is a really good defensive player. He's athletic. He's quick off the floor. He can help protect the rim. He rebounds extraordinarily well. And on the offensive end, he essentially looks like the Devereaux Summer League version of Jalen Reynolds. He is just blowing by guys, dunking on them in the big sky. Now, half of those guys couldn't guard Snow in the post, so take that with a grain of salt. But he does hit some mid-range jumpers, too. He's not afraid to shoot it out to three-point range. So it'll be interesting to see how Xavier matches up with them defensively, but I think this is kind of the Jalen Reynolds game. James Farr has his matchups where he seems to excel at. I think this is one where they kind of need Jalen to play well because Bolomboy plays very similar to Jalen. He's a good athlete, likes to dunk, pretty explosive. I think it could be a really fun matchup to watch, but I do think Jalen playing well will be important, although I don't necessarily know that Bolin Boy is good enough to beat Xavier on his own. So, and then other than that, pretty much everything offensively runs through those two guys. They're very patient. They'll run them off a million things to try to get them involved or isolate Bolin Boy. In the finals, Montana double teamed him, made him throw the ball out, which made him play even slower because they just keep rotating it back. And then eventually Singlin would jack a tough three. So it'll be interesting to see what happens on both ends of the court. But I think overall, this is a really good matchup for Xavier in the first round. And quite frankly, if you're a two seed and you can't beat the 15, you don't deserve to be there to begin with. So with that said, let's take a look at that second round matchup, Snow. Wisconsin, Pittsburgh. I think both of us agree that these are two more styles that kind of favor Xavier. What do you think happens in that first round matchup between Wisconsin and Pitt, though?
You know, I have Wisconsin beating Pitt. I don't think either team's great, but I think Wisconsin's slightly better. You know, they got Nigel Hayes, who's a good player. And then, Bronson Koenig is a pretty good player. But Bronson Koenig's, he's not an attacking point guard, not a Mo Watson who really breaks you down. He's a good shooter. He's a good player, but he's a guy like, you know, Edmund's length gives a lot of problems to. And then Nigel thrives as a mismatch guy. Well, he's not a mismatch guy against Xavier because they've got primarily at the four Trayvon Blewett and Kaiser Gates who can guard him. Now, Trayvon's never going to be known as a defensive stopper, but
he's in the right mold, right?
Yeah, he's just, you know, that's a matchup he's more favorable towards. And then, you know, Xavier's just so much more physical. Ethan Happ's a solid player. He's a good player. But Xavier's so much more physical, and I don't know if Ethan Happ's ready for that. And then, you know, certainly on the wing, Xavier's got a big advantage. Now, Wisconsin can go big with Happ, Vito Brown, and then Nigel at the three. And that'll be interesting to see what Xavier tries to do with that. But then, you know, Wisconsin has no chance to guard Xavier.
Yeah, if they start doing that, they really are going to be chasing the ball around the perimeter, and Xavier's going to be jacking some threes at that point. And, yeah, you know, then it becomes certainly a thing where Xavier has to hit shots in an arena that they're unfamiliar with. But I really like that matchup if Wisconsin decides to go big.
So, and like, people are going to look at Wisconsin and say, like, great three-point shooting team. They're really not. You know, Hayes can hit threes. Kanan can certainly hit threes. And the Kid Hill can make some threes, but just their lack of athleticism, I think, is going to be a problem against Xavier. They, you know, they've got no one who can remotely guard Edmund. And then it's like, you know, Zach Showalter, he's a solid player, but, you know, Miles is fine against him. I just think that's a very favorable seven seed matchup as opposed to, well, all the sevens kind of suck. You got Dayton, Iowa, and Oregon State as the other sevens. I don't know what the hell happened on the seven line. But, you know, there were some matchups like potentially like a UConn, even though they're not that good. They're a bad matchup for Xavier.
Right.
You know, they're, you know, maybe even looking at like a St. Joe's. They got some pieces that would give Xavier problems. So there's some spots on the bracket that, you know, like some teams I'd be like, oh, I don't want to face them. But, you know, I don't think Wisconsin's one of them. So I think this sets up pretty well for Xavier.
Wisconsin ranks 67th in the country in offensive efficiency, 24th in defensive efficiency. As you mentioned, they just play at a disturbingly slow pace, 341st in the country, which that'll just be brutal. So while I hope that doesn't happen, one thing to note, their three-point percentage defense has been terrible this year. They really pack it in. Teams are shooting 38% against them. On the flip side, they're shooting 35.8% from three themselves. Just a quick look at Pittsburgh real quick, even though I tend to agree with you that I like Wisconsin in that matchup. Pittsburgh a little bit different. They're not nearly as good defensively. They rank 86th in the country in defensive efficiency. They rank 33rd in offensive efficiency. They also play slow, 299th in the country. And they also struggle to defend the three-point line. Kind of similar teams in the way they play. But just personnel-wise, real quick with them, I mean, Jamel Artis, a guy, James Robinson, a guy I always liked in AAU. He's a solid guard, but Snow, what do you think of their personnel and the way it matches up, just briefly?
Yeah, you know, you look at it, you know, James Robinson, you know, they got a good front court with Jamel Artis and Michael Young. And I do think Jamel Artis, he's a physical, tough kid, and he's really shooting the ball pretty well this year. Yeah, so he would
36% from three on over 120 attempts.
You know, he would give Xavier some issues. But outside of that, you know, James Robinson's a solid player, but he's a guard Xavier likes because he's not a big athletic kid. He's more of like a tough kid, and they're fine defending that. Kid Chris Jones, you know, he stepped up a little bit lately. He's a guy. He's just a guy.
Yeah.
You know, Sheldon Jeter's just a guy. So they've got some size, but they don't have the explosive offensive weapons to give Xavier problems. And they're a team you can – even though they're great against the 2-3 zone, I don't want people to go, well, they beat Syracuse three times. That's a different ballgame. Against Xavier's 1-3-1, that's a team that doesn't match up very well.
Right. And also, I don't think – you know, Wisconsin, I think, can give maybe Xavier some trouble with their defense. I don't think Pittsburgh's defense is nearly good enough to stop Xavier. So that work matchup probably works out even more favorably for the Musketeers. So, Snow, I think what we're kind of saying here, you start looking at expectations for Xavier. To me, my thing has always been – you control, essentially, by how good of a team you are, you should be able to control your ability to get to the Sweet 16. If you're good enough throughout the season, you're a good enough team when you get to the tournament, you're going to be good enough to beat those first two matchups and make the Sweet 16. I think that's very much the case for Xavier. After that, you need some luck. You need to be playing well because it's only a one-game scenario. You need to get the right matchups. I think it gets tough to expect more than a Sweet 16 out of any team in the country. But what do you think are minimal expectations for this team? Sweet 16, does that sound right?
Yeah, I think this team as a 2-seed should expect to get to the Sweet 16. Now, that doesn't mean if somehow they lose to Wisconsin or Pittsburgh that the season's a failure. But it does mean they didn't do what should be reasonably expected of them in this next week to 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's a one game scenario, and the tournament is always magic. Things happen, obviously, but yeah, you control this. You are the better team in all of these games and all of these matchups. So if you don't make it there, then the basis of where we judge all college basketball teams, which is two weekends in March, you would have failed in that regard. So yeah, I think it would be considered a disappointment if they exit before the Sweet 16. You start looking at the Sweet 16. We've talked about this a little bit on the message board. The thing that everyone's pushing out there is West Virginia's press giving Xavier's trouble. I understand why everyone feels that way, especially after watching Edmund Sumner get in foul trouble multiple times late in the season. However, one, I don't think it's a guarantee that West Virginia gets there by any stretch of the imagination. And two, I think Xavier's offense may give West Virginia just as many problems.
Yeah, you know, first thing is I have Notre Dame beating West Virginia. I go back to Bruce Pearl when he was coaching Tennessee. They came in. They actually beat Xavier in the Cintas Center. Hell of a game.
Yeah.
But Tennessee was known as a pressing, trapping team, and they didn't do that at all. He goes, you think I'm going to come in here and press Drew Lavender and get blown out by 30 points? So I don't – and Huggins is a great coach. I don't care what Xavier fans think of him. Genuinely have zero you-know-whats to give. He's a hell of a coach. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. So he's not an idiot. But he has to press because his team can't score in the half court.
Right.
So while their offensive efficiency looks good, it's because they score so much off of turnovers. So they have to press. I don't think you can press Demetrius Jackson. Now, West Virginia's press is far more controlled and far more intelligent than VCU's press was a couple years ago when Trey Burke was literally giggling as he was breaking the press and like – creating a layup or a dunk for Mitch McGarry on every possession. So I don't think it would quite be a layup line like that, but it's really tough to press Demetrius Jackson. I'm just not sure you can do that, and that's why I think Notre Dame's a tough matchup. Plus, when he does break the press, you're going to have an opportunity to shoot threes. Notre Dame makes threes.
Yep, and that's the thing. It opens up the court, and that's the thing even if West Virginia gets into that matchup with Xavier. It's like, yes, they can force turnovers. Yes, maybe that's a concern for Xavier. But at the same time, anytime you press, and even if you're really good at and good at recovering and getting back like West Virginia is, you're opening up the court, and that's what Xavier begs teams to do. Xavier wants to be able to play free and fast and get good open looks at three in transition. And when they can do that, their offense gets rolling, and it's very difficult to keep them from going on one of those 15-2 runs or 17-2 runs. And West Virginia is a team very susceptible to offensive droughts. So again, I still, even if it comes to that matchup, I still like Xavier. The more interesting thing, I think, is Notre Dame and Xavier, because I think Demetrius Jackson is a guy that gives Xavier's defense a whole lot of problems.
Yeah, he's an issue. There's no question about that. You know, now he hasn't been playing especially well lately. Now, I don't know what that necessarily means or what that doesn't mean long term, but he's really been struggling to shoot the ball, hasn't been playing all that well. So in that respect, you could get some, you know, something to look at. But when I say he's not playing well, also keep in mind there's a difference between playing well and being able to break a press. So that's not why I'm as concerned with it from a when they play West Virginia standpoint as to if they play Xavier, because again, Xavier is going to have to make plays in the half court where he hasn't been as good recently. Zach August is also a very good player for Notre Dame, a very, very good rebounder. Then Steve Vasturia and VJ Beachum basically are wing shooters. Vasturia is also a really good defensive player. So, you know, they've got some wings with length. They've got, you know, some size in August and a heck of a player in Demetrius Jackson, but they have absolutely no depth and they have absolutely no interest in playing defense. And against West Virginia, who struggles to score, that can be masked a little bit. Against Xavier, who most definitely does not struggle to score, I think that's something that would favor Xavier in that matchup. But obviously, you're in the Sweet 16. You're playing a heck of a player in Demetrius Jackson. This is a team that's beaten Duke, Louisville, North Carolina, actually beat Duke twice, Louisville, North Carolina. You know, they've beaten good teams. They beat Iowa when Iowa didn't completely suck. So that's just kind of what happens.
Yeah, and the other thing about them is I think it's tough to throw the 1-3-1 at them to an extent because of Vasturia and Beachum, you know, being those guys that can kind of get in that corner with some length and shoot. I think that would be a bit of concern if you try to go 1-3-1 to take away Jackson and August, obviously a problem on the offensive glass in that scenario as well. And yeah, Colson, not a bad offensive rebounder either. So,
yeah, I think that would be a bad 1-3-1 game. Matt Ryan could come in. He can really make shots. Freshman from New York. So I would say that would be a man-to-man game for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And but they're just so bad defensively, and against a Xavier team that's so good offensively, I don't think Notre Dame could get enough stops to win.
Yeah, Notre Dame, 10th in the country in offensive efficiency, 172nd in defensive efficiency, 316th in tempo. So they also, you know, I guess Bray's still doing some burn offense. hasn't gotten away from that yet.
What's interesting about this bracket is you look at it, Wisconsin's ungodly slow, Notre Dame's ungodly slow, Pittsburgh's ungodly slow. West Virginia, while they press and their defensive time of possession is very small, their offensive one is deathly slow as well. So you're facing a lot of methodical offensive teams in this part of the bracket. You look at it, West Virginia averages 18.1 seconds per possession on offense, which is 257th nationally.
Right.
So it's just interesting.
Yeah, they just are really able to speed teams up and force turnovers, which keeps their overall pace at 93rd in the country. But it's absurd how much slower they play offensively compared to what their average tempo is. I guess we could talk about the overall just East region here. I mean, when you start looking at that other side of the bracket, you're really looking ahead of yourselves. But what else do we got to do on this podcast? UK is the team that I honestly think is the worst matchup in the country for Xavier, because you have Tyler Ulis, who is essentially Maurice Watson, but a first-round talent version of him. And you have size and length. Now, it's not nearly as tough as Xavier's, which is where I think Xavier could gain an edge, but you still have that size and that length inside to contend with Xavier on the glass. And I actually think Scal is a guy who, as a face-up player, could give Xavier some trouble in matchups, which would be interesting to see how those post-matchups played out for sure. But then Jamal Murray, you know, a 6'7 guy that can shoot it, can create off the bounce, one of the best scorers in the country, going to be a lottery pick. I don't exactly know what Xavier does with that. My guess is you put Remy on him, but, you know, then you have a guy in Isaiah Briscoe who, while people are kind of down on what he's done this year, he's a strong, athletic guy who can get to the basket and create off the bounce. So I think UK is just a horrendous matchup for Xavier.
Not a good matchup. The thing that Xavier should be able to do is rebound the heck out of the ball in that game, but you have to get them to miss shots, which I think Xavier would struggle with. I actually have UK beating Xavier in the Elite Eight personally. I also have UK beating UNC, and the reason for that is I don't think you can beat Kentucky making twos, and UNC doesn't make threes. And if Kentucky's making threes and UNC's making twos, I'm saying, all right, I'll take Kentucky. That said, UNC's offensive rebounding could be just overwhelm Kentucky's soft front court. So that's something that's interesting to monitor. If Xavier is lucky enough to – and I don't take lucky the wrong way. Every team's got to get lucky to get to the Elite Eight, so don't blast me on the message board. If Xavier is lucky enough to get to the Elite Eight and is facing UNC, that's interesting because there might be 100% of possessions of 1-3-1 zone against UNC.
Yeah, definitely. I would think that would absolutely be the case. I mean, Joel Berry can shoot, but other than that, who worries you in that against that 1-3-1?
Yeah, and the thing with the 1-3-1 is you can, even though there's places to shoot, you can still get assigned to shooters.
Right.
You know, especially
well, you can match up with one or maybe two shooters very well in the 1-3-1. The problem is when they can space it with a couple guys that aren't on the ball.
Yeah, so you got Joel Berry who can shoot, and then you still, even though Marcus Page has struggled, you still don't want him getting clean looks.
Right.
But you can match up to those two guys, and they're not very long. They're not very big.
And you'd much rather face Marcus Page in the 1-3-1 as opposed to the man-to-man. Man-to-man, Marcus Page would worry me against Xavier's defense.
Well, he's so good at using screens and stuff, I would agree. I think UNC is a better matchup for Xavier than Kentucky is. Because what would be interesting is at the four spot. Because is Bryce Johnson going to just completely annihilate Trayvon on the glass, or is Trayvon going to foul Bryce Johnson out in 5 minutes on the offensive end?
Which are both equally possible.
I have no idea. So that would be very intriguing to watch. And, go from there. You know, would Kennedy Meeks be able to handle Farr and Reynolds? You know, a lot has to play out. I mean, you talk in that matchup, UNC, and I don't – I think UNC might – no, I don't think UNC is the best team in the country, but –
I was so hoping you were going to say that.
People think UNC is the best team in the country, but if they play Providence, Providence is the two best players on the court. Now, I'm still picking UNC to beat Providence, but when you have the best player on the court, let alone the two best players on the court, you definitely have a chance to win. Indiana, you never know when they're going to make 15 threes in a game.
Well, and North Carolina doesn't exactly play the style that takes Chris Dunn out of the game.
No, he's going to – as long as Chris Dunn's not like suffering from SARS or West Nile or whatever the hell has gotten into him the last few weeks, if he's over that, he should go for about 60, 40, and 20.
But yeah, so Indiana, go ahead. And what do you think about Indiana in this region? I'm interested to hear what you think their chances are.
I just think they're a totally different team away from Assembly Hall. I watched them in Assembly Hall last week beat the brakes off of Maryland, and it's like, damn, that team's good. And then you watch them on the road against a horrendous Iowa team. Horrendous. By the way, shout out to Jay. You talk about the committee doing Jay Wright a solid. They gave him Iowa or Temple.
Yeah.
But getting back, Indiana, I see them in the Big Ten tournament. They're just a different team away from Assembly Hall. If anyone's never been to a game at Assembly Hall, it's an incredible atmosphere, and Indiana really feeds off of that, especially when they start getting going up and down, and Yogi's making plays, and their kids like Zeisloft, who can't do anything but shoot. So I think they're a different team, and I think they lose to Kentucky. And if that's the case, I don't encourage people going to other message boards, but I would pop some popcorn and go to your favorite IU message board and just watch.
I would agree with that. What happens there? What happens at Indiana if they lose in the second round? Nothing,
It will be one of the all-time meltdowns.
But, I mean, you can't do anything with Tom Crean at this point, right?
No, but it would just be phenomenal to watch. I'm all about entertainment, man.
Oh, I am too. I think it's going to be hilarious. But I do not see them beating Kentucky. I just don't. So, but I'm excited for that matchup. I think it's a great second round matchup. So I think that pretty thoroughly breaks down the East region. Are there any other just awesome matchups that you loved when you saw the bracket when it came out? I like Vanderbilt Wichita State as a play-in game. Everyone's mad that they made it in, but I think it's a great first round game.
Yeah, that's a heck of a play-in game. I think Hawaii and California is going to be interesting.
Stefan Yankovic.
That's your guy. You love him.
I do not, but yeah.
And likewise, the thought of Maryland and Cal in the second round. That's really intriguing as well. And then Purdue, Iowa State in the second round is another one I'm looking at. Like, wow, that could be a heck of a basketball game.
What are your thoughts on California, Kansas, if that matchup happens? I think California is a team that can give Kansas some trouble.
I don't trust Cal away from home.
Fair enough. Snow, one of the things that you are excellent at is being negative. So just really quickly, I'd like to ask you about some of the holes of these top teams. You've already told us about the teams in the East region. Looking at the Midwest, what do you not like about Virginia?
You know how many NCAA tournament games Tony Bennett has won at Virginia?
I do not. I do not know his official record.
He's won 3 in 6 years. When you play that slow in the tournament in losable games, I just really think you set yourself up. It's hard to win 4-1 possession games or 2 possession games. It's very hard to do that. And you've got one really good player, Malcolm Brogdon, but outside of that, does anybody scare you on their team? And then that pace of play, I think it brings so much more variation into effect that it's tough to win.
I would agree with all of that, which is why Michigan State is my favorite team in the Midwest. So what do you not like about Michigan State?
Their interior production can be a little hit or miss. You never quite know what you're getting with Costello. And while Deontay Davis is an unbelievable talent, he's still extraordinarily inconsistent. And then Denzel Valentine's been phenomenal. They're shooting the heck out of the ball. But when he has to come off the court, they're bringing Tum Tum on, and Tum Tum can't shoot at all. And then it's like stuff just gets crowded, and it can be tough. You never quite know if Aaron Harris is going to implode or not. So they have like a couple. Now, I'm picking Michigan State to win the national title, but there are some question marks there.
This is such a cruel thing to do while people are trying to fill out their brackets. They're just pulling their hair out while you're crushing their national championship picks. Oklahoma, what do you not like about Oklahoma in the West?
They can only beat you one way, jump shots. Now, I'm not one of these you can't win shooting jump shots things. No, you can't.
But you got to be hot.
Yeah, but you got to be hot. And there's a difference between like a jump shooting team and then having no second option. Oklahoma's they can't get to the foul line. They can't score inside. There's no plan B. You've got to have some kind of plan B, and they don't have it. That said, in the worst region on the bracket by a mile, I have them going to the Final Four.
I think Oregon State might upset them in the second round, but if they don't, I would probably agree with you. Oregon, number one seed in that bracket. What do you not like about Oregon?
They don't have good point guard play. And Chris Boucher, heck of a player, but if he gets in foul trouble and at 135 pounds and 6'10", foul trouble is going to be very possible. In the Pac-12, there aren't a lot of big physical big guys. Well, you know, they're going to run in. You know, you're facing Cincinnati, or, you know, if Cincinnati gets past St. Joe's, Cincinnati, even though Octavius Ellis can be a space cadet at times, big physical dude. Duke has Marshall Plumlee. That guy can give – can give him problems. You know, Baylor's got Rico Gathers. You know, Boucher might break in half. So I think that is an issue for them. And I think they're a team that thrives on mismatches. And the further you go with Dylan Brooks, I think the less that mismatch comes out, I should say.
All right, finally, the South region, Kansas. What do you not like about Kansas?
They don't have a pro.
True. That's a fact.
When's the last time we had a national champion without a pro in their starting lineup?
But all the experience and senior leadership, Snow. Perry Ellis has been playing college basketball for 15 years now. Like, yeah. you can't buy that type of veteran leadership.
Some schools would probably try to buy a veteran like that.
What about Villanova? What do you not like about Villanova?
They're not athletic.
And Jay Wright in the tournament.
I think a little bit's being – I mean, Kansas's first weekend tradition, so to speak, is just as bad. But shoot a lot of threes, don't make a whole ton of them. And Ochefu, one, he's not healthy. And two, he's their only real good body down low, and that provides some problems.
That's the big concern, is without him playing up to snuff, they are just not the same team defensively. But when you look at their bracket, I mean, my God, how much easier could their path to the Sweet 16 be?
Yeah, like literally, I swear, like Joe Castiglione, the tourney chair, who's the AD at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Like, he must have been like, hey, Jay, I'm doing you a solid. I'm giving you Iowa, who's horrendous, or Temple, who you beat by 40 at their place.
Right. In the second round. I mean, that's the easiest path to Sweet 16 that anyone has, bar none, including the one seeds. So,
without question. Now, Asheville, I don't know a damn thing about them, but I'm going to assume Villanova can beat Asheville.
Right. And, yeah, so if you look at that, then you get into probably – do you like Miami or who to make it there to the Sweet 16? Just curious now that we're talking.
Arizona.
Arizona, that's what I was thinking too, which that matchup would be interesting.
Just because I think the bad version of Angel Rodriguez is likely to come out against a solid defensive team like Arizona. Sean's going to, you know, really game plan against them. And, you know, Miami's thinner down low, and I think Arizona could take advantage of that with Ryan Anderson. So I like Arizona in that matchup, and then I have Villanova beating Arizona.
So who's your final four, Snow? Give it to us as we wrap this up.
I have Kansas facing Oklahoma, Kentucky facing Michigan State, Kansas facing Michigan State for it all, with Tom Izzo cutting down the nets in Houston.
All right. Any other final thoughts on the bracket? Anything you want to wrap this podcast up with?
How much pizza do you think is going to be consumed?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the amount of pizza consumed by myself in New York City. I had exactly one meal that did not include pizza the entire time I was there.
Yeah, I did that once, and I'm fat, obviously, so I like pizza probably more than any human being on earth. I went there for like 4 days, like in college when my – or right after college, my buddy played for the Giants. It was a whole big thing. Xavier lost to Duke by 130 there. I had like 4 straight days of pizza, and then finally I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I think I might die of a heart attack.
If there was a Pizza Suprema down the street from me right now, I'd be there today. I am not kidding you. I am a sick man, but it worked out great. Yeah, other than that, I will – Dan presented me with a very nice gift while we were in New York City, a DePaul t-shirt with my name and the number 69, hashtag nice, on the back. So it was a really nice trip. You know, we hung out with Paul Daner, got a lot of Bengals insider information while watching college basketball games at our favorite bar in the country, Standings, and hung out with Mad Dog 88. Shout out to Mad Dog. I don't really have any other good stories from the trip, I don't think. Not that many funny things happen other than Dan quoting Donald Trump most of the weekend. And, you know, that's about it. How was your weekend in Indianapolis, Snow?
I covered the Big Ten tournament.
And by covered, you mean you got FaceTime on television for 3 straight days and didn't write a thing?
No, I did write. That's a lie. I'm suing you for slander. But Saturday night got a little aggressive, and then yesterday was a disaster.
Well, sometimes you just got to take L's on championship week, and I think we
– Oh, I took a significant L. I took a significant L, but I bounced back today, and I'm a functional human. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, I recovered and responded.
All right. So there you have it. I think that does it for our – NCAA Tournament Preview edition of the Dana and Victory Podcast. For the legend Brian Snow, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.